By the summer of 1963, Brian Epstein was managing not only the Beatles, but a host of other Merseyside stars.
Well, apart from a general feeling of pleasure, is there any specific moment in management when you really get a kick? Have you had a real kick out of any aspect of management lately?
Well, you always get a kick when a record comes into the hit parade or a record hits number one. That is a great feeling. It's a simple thing, really, but it's a great feeling because you've been right. The artist has been right and you've been right. The recording manager's been right. The song was right. The artist was right. And it was put over in the right way. And one feels that all one's work has sort of suddenly been worthwhile. It's just like, I suppose, winning a race. It's just that it's not just the record and the artist and the song getting to number one, but so much happens because a record has hit number one. An artist is suddenly important and they're wanted everywhere because the record looks as though it's going to be number one in other parts of the world. A record in the charts means a great deal to an artist in this damned age.
There was no shortage of Brian Epstein number ones that summer. Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas recorded a number of Lennon-McCartney songs, including Bad to Me, which went to number one in August. The Beatles never officially recorded this song, but here is the Beatles demo version that was given to Billy J. Kramer.
If you ever leave me, I'll be sad and blue. Don't you ever leave me, I'm so in love with you. Birds in the sky would be sad and lonely if they knew that I lost my one and only. They'd be sad if you're bad to me. The leaves on the trees would be softly sighing if they heard from the breeze that you left me crying. They'd be sad. Don't be bad. I know you won't leave me, 'cause you told me so. I have no intention of letting you go. Just as long as you let me know, you won't be bad to me. So the birds in the sky won't be sad and lonely, 'cause they know that I got my one and only. They'll be glad you're not bad.
Know enough about music to have any say in the actual composition or recording or arrangement of numbers?
I don't know about music, but I think I know about hit songs, hit numbers, hit sounds.
Is there anyone in the recording studios with whom you might possibly clash over this sort of issue?
George Martin is the Beatles and many of my other artists' recording manager, but we get on extremely well, fortunately, and we work very closely on what is recorded. Once titles are decided upon, the rest is really left to him. I sit in on a lot of sessions and so on, and I'll say what I think about various records and what sides should be issued, but he makes the recordings. I'm not a technical person at all.
Apologize to her. You know you should be glad. With a love like that, you know you should be glad.
She Loves You was released on August 23rd and was number one on September the 7th. It stayed in the top five for 16 weeks. Recording continued through September and October for the Beatles' second album, and on October the 13th, the word Beatlemania was invented to describe the scenes when they played live on the top-rated television variety show Sunday Night at the London Palladium. On the 17th, they recorded I Wanna Hold Your Hand, the first Beatles record to be made using the new four-track recording facility in Studio 2 at Abbey Road.
What do you like about the Beatles?
All their clothes, their hairstyle, they've got, you know, their smashing voices. They're just fabulous. Well, I like all their clothes and their voices. They're just marvellous. Well, I think they're original and they've got smashing voices. They're all good looking, every one of them, and they're great. They're the best looking group out, and they've got gorgeous sound, and they wear fabulous clothes.
What about their singing?
Oh, it's fabulous.
Why do you like the Beatles?
Because they've got very unusual air caps, and they're very nice looking.
They've got marvellous voice and personality.
Who has?
The Beatles.
All of them?
Yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney.
They're all handsome and gorgeous.
What about Ringo?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Imagine I'm in love with you. It's easy 'cause I know. I've imagined I'm in love with you many, many, many times before. It's not like me to pretend, but I'll get you in the end. Yes, I will, I'll get you in the end. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I think about you night and day. I need you and it's true. When I think about you, I can say I'm never, 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 never blue. So I'm telling you, my friend, that I'll get you in the end. Yes, I will, I'll get you in the end.
On October the 24th, the Beatles left for a short tour of Sweden. Their return on the 31st created chaos at London Airport.
What confusion here at London Airport. Hundreds and hundreds of young Beatle fans shouting, yelling, waving umbrellas and hats, shouting for their heroes, the four young men in dark clothes who just disembarked from the huge white and blue twin jet airliner which has flown them from Stockholm. There's a crowd of photographers at the back of the plane. All the passengers came out first. This caused mounting excitement. The flashbulbs are going, 40 or 50 photographers, a lot of airline officials, and now there's quite a crush at the bottom of the steps at the rear of the plane. Scores of people down there with the flashbulbs going as the Beatles try to force their way through. Massive security precautions here to bring them to the main building. The fans are virtually going wild here on the balcony. They're shouting and yelling, and they're having a wonderful time despite the pouring rain. Now the Beatles are making their way towards the main terminal. They're waving, smiling at the crowds. They're wearing shorty black overcoats. The Beatle haircuts stand out for all to see amidst the milling throng down there. And now comes the rush. Hundreds of fans rushing over the roof of the Queen's Building here to the exits to get downstairs and see their idols on the air.
In the morning, I'm a-giving you the morning. Step on my blue suede shoe. Hey, dude. Crazy partner, oh, I see it real wide.
coming up next, November and December 1963.
One, two, three, five!
On November the 1st, the Beatles began a 34-night tour of Britain, and on the 4th they received royal approval when they appeared on the bill of the Royal Variety Show. November 22nd, the day that President Kennedy was assassinated, and the second album with the Beatles was released. And on the 29th, so was their fourth EMI single.
Well, lads, almost unknown in January, and now going into the Royal Command performance in November. This is quite a rise, even for your business, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, but it's been very quick, and we have been very lucky.
How much of this is due, do you think, to pure musical talent?
Don't know. No idea. You just can't tell, you know. I mean, maybe a lot of it, maybe none of it.
How much would you say?
I agree with Paul, you know. It's very, you know.
how much of this is getting popularity by acting the fool a bit and playing around?
Well, I mean, that's just natural. We don't do it, you know, we do it anyway, whether we're on stage or
not. But your funny haircuts aren't natural.
Well, we don't think they're funny, you see, copper.
As far as playing your type of music is concerned, is this a new thing, do you think, Ringo?
No, not really.
And the word in the music world is that this is, we've heard this type of thing before.
Oh, yeah. You know, we just play how we can, and the sound we make is just us, and it seems to be selling at the moment. So.
It's rock.
It is rock, yeah, rock as John roll. Said, but then.
December the 7th, I Wanna Hold Your Hand was number one, displacing She Loves You. And on that same day, the Beatles performed in Liverpool for their fan club, appeared as the panel on a television show called Jukebox Jury, and gave two concerts at the Liverpool Odeon, one of which was transmitted live on television in a show called It's the Beatles. On the 24th, they began a 16-night Christmas show at the Finsbury Park Astoria in London. The show was seen by 100,000 people. But probably the most important date in December was the 26th, when Capitol Records released I Wanna Hold Your Hand in the USA, much to the satisfaction of George Martin.
At that time, I was part of EMI. Parlophone Records was one of the labels on EMI. And EMI happened to own Capitol Records in America, which was the head of it, of Capitol at that time, was Alan Livingston. And they maintained a frightfully independent line. They they frankly thought the British records were pretty awful, and of course they were right to a certain extent. And they made no bones about it. You know, they anything that was issued over there was done with a great deal of condescension. We really know how to market records here, and if you're lucky, you might possibly have a record issued by us. Whether it'll ever sell, you know, it was that kind of approach. So when we'd made a hit with the first hit with the Beatles, we sent it over to Capitol and begged them to release it, and they turned it down. It was rather like St. Peter. So when they turned it down, when America turned down the first record, it was obvious that I had to find another means of issuing the record in the States, and we got our independent people in New York to scout around, and we found a small label that would take the first record, and they did. They issued it, but they worked very hard on it, I think, but nothing much happened to it. And then we made the second record in England, which was From Me to You, and again sent it to Capitol saying, look, the first one didn't do any good with the small American label, will you please issue this one? And they said, no, no good. There's no chance. That Rock and Sound, nothing like what we have in America, couldn't stand a chance. So again, we applied, this time to another label. I think VJ and Swan were the two. By the time we made the third record, which was She Loves You, we were beginning to get a dent in the American market. But Capitol still were not interested. And it was really the cock crowing three times, because they didn't move themselves until the end of the year, by which time both Swan and VJ were making a bit of a penetration, and Capitol realised they might be missing out on something. So then they grabbed the master and put their weight behind it, which meant they had competition from Swan and VJ, and we were in the lucky position of having three record companies fighting to get our music on the air. So in a way, the tremendous holdout was like a dam bursting, and it did us a great deal of good. And of course, with the hoo-ha from England of Beatlemania and the Mopheads and all that rubbish, it eventually turned the Americans. And when it did turn, it was a tremendous coup.
Good King Wenceslas last looked out on the feast of Stephen, as the slow ray round about, deep and crispy, brightly showed the boot last night on the musty cruel. Henry Hall and David Lloyd, Betty Grable too.
Hello, this is John speaking with his voice. We're all very happy to be able to talk to you like this on this little bit of plastic. This record reaches you at the end of a really gear year for us, and it's all due to you. When we made our first record on Parlophone towards the end of 1962, we hoped everybody would like what we'd already been our type of music for several years already. But we had no idea of all the gear things in store for us. It all happened, really, when Please Please Me became a number one hit, and after that, well, Court of Blimey's Heather No. Our biggest thrill of the year, well, I suppose it must have been topping the bill at the London Palladium, and then, only a couple of days later, being invited to take part in the Royal Variety Show. This time last year, we were all dead chuffed because Love Me Do got into the top 20, and we can't believe, really, that so many things have happened in between already. Just before I pass you over to Paul, I'd like to say thank you to all the Beatle people who have written to me during the year, and everyone who sent me gifts and cards for my birthday, which I'm trying to forget, in October. I'd love to reply personally to everyone, but I just haven't enough pens. In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
This is Paul here. Everything that John said goes for me too, especially the bit about birthday cards and the parcels, because all our homes and offices got stacks of mail last June.
Ow!
Well, it was my birthday. Anyway, we're all dead pleased by the way you've treated us in 1963, and we'll try to do everything we can to please you with the type of songs we write and record next year. Oh, yeah, somebody asked us if we still like Jelly Babies. Well, we used to like them, in fact, we loved them, and we said so in one of the papers, you see. Ever since then, we've been getting them in boxes, packets and crates. Anyway, we've gone right off Jelly Babies, you see. But we still like Peppermint Creams and Chocolate Drops and Dolly Mitchell's and all those sort of things, don't we?
Yes, yes, oh yes.
Well, lots of people asked us what we enjoy best, you see. Concerts and television or recording. We like doing stage shows because, you know, it's great to hear an audience enjoying themselves. But the thing we like best, I think so anyway, is going into the recording studio.
Yeah, lovely. We enjoy that.
Love
very
that,
kindly.
To make new records, which is what we've been doing all day before we started on this special message. Well, what we like to hear most is one of our songs, you know, taking shape in a recording studio, one of the ones what John and I have written. And then listening to the tapes afterwards to hear how it all worked out, you see. Well, I'm running over my time and people are telling me to stop.
Like, stop, Ringo, stop, 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 stop shouting
so,
those animals.
I'll finish now with it. Wishing everyone happy Krimble and a Merry New Year, and especially all the ones who paid the subscription.
Ja, das wird und danke schön und den Grüß von Eben. Ja, den Grüß von Eben schon. Ja, das wird wunderschön, boy.
Danke schön. Ja, Ringo.
Hello, Ringo here. As you know, I was the last member to join the Beatles. I started to play drums in the group 1962. I've been a couple of other groups.
Oh, just wish the people wish merry, happy. Go on for Christmas. Christmas.
Merry, happy New Year. And folks, happy Christmas and may everything you wish be granted.
Sing as Wenceslas, King Wenceslas.
King Wenceslas.
Where good King Wenceslas last looked down on the feast of Stephen, when the snow was on the ground, deep and crisp and even.
Thank you, Ringo. Thank you, Ringo. We'll phone you. I'm George Harrison. Nobody else has said anything yet about our fan club secretaries, Anne Collingham and Betty, you know, Rose. Not to mention Frida Kelly in Liverpool.
Good old Frida!
So on behalf of us all, I'd just like to say a great big thank you to Anne, Bettina and Frida for all the hard work they've done. And we just hope you can go on pleasing you for a
keep
long
screaming.
Time. Because it's your reaction to our records that really matters. And I'd just like to say, brightly was the shone that night, though the winter cruel, when a pork pie came inside, gathering winter cruel.
Rudolph no grain day, had a very shiny nose, when everybody told him.
Mickey the red-nosed Negro,
Rudolph
had a very shiny nose. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Right about now, I would like to bring on somebody for you. Want to tell you that, ask you to help me make this introduction. I'd like to say a name, and I'd like you to repeat the name. And then when we get through, we'll all add it up, and it ought to have some fun for you. Are you ready? Let me say it first. You repeat it after me. John!
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a history of the Beatle years, 1962 to 1970. I'm Roger Scott in London. It's 1964.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Paul
speaking.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul speaking. Over to John.
Over to George, I forgot.
Okay, I'll over to George. John speaking. Hello.
That was Ringo, folks.
Well, what can I say?
And goodbye to all of us.
Sergeant Pepper's lonely, Sergeant Pepper's lonely, Sergeant Pepper's lonely, Oscar Band.
You know you made me cry, I see no use in wondering why I cry for you.
1964 began with I Wanna Hold Your Hand at number one in the UK singles chart and with the Beatles top of the album chart. The 1963 Beatles Christmas show in London ended on the 11th of January, and on the 12th they appeared again on Sunday night at the London Palladium. On the 14th they flew to Paris, and from the 16th to the 4th of February gave a series of concerts at the Paris Olympia. On January 20th, the Meet the Beatles album was released in the US. George Martin was in Paris to produce German language versions of She Loves You and I Wanna Hold Your Hand.
It all happened when the Beatles were appearing in France, and I was over there with them. They were appearing at the Olympia in Paris, and Brian rang me one night. He was staying at the George Tank, and we'd been together that evening, and he rang me in the middle of the night, around about 1 o'clock, and says, George, I've got great news. I said, it better be great for waking me up. And he said, we're number one in America. And that was, it happened really quite quickly.
love me do. Oh, love me do. True. Just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you. I got arms that long to hold you and keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. She loves you, yeah. Should be glad. She said you hurt her so. She almost lost her mind. Now she says she knows you're not the hurting kind. She said she loved you, and you know that can be bad. She loves you, and you know you should be glad. It's such a feeling that my love I can hide. Yeah, you got that something I think you understand. When I feel that something,
I Want to Hold Your Hand hit number one in the US on February 1st. Here's Brian Epstein.
Well, obviously one thought about America in connection with the Beatles for a long time, because I was always quite sure that really the Beatles would make it big over there. We were all rather perturbed about it because we seemed to be issuing the records and nothing much was happening. So far as sort of looking around and seeing what was the matter, I think that it was very simple. My answer to the boys when I came around was I didn't think that we'd yet produced a record which was right for the American market. But I did think, having listened to an awful lot of American pop music and what was currently popular over there, that I Want to Hold Your Hand, which was just about to be issued, was the right one. Plus the fact that an awful lot of information had filtered through from the British press, from the Royal Command and the Palladium and the scenes in London and Beatlemania, as it's called, in general. There was great interest at that stage, and it was just the right moment for the issue of I Want to Hold Your Hand.
And then, on February the 7th...
Any doubts about the Beatles' reception in America were dispelled the moment they touched down. New Yorkers turned out in force, and making allowance for an American accent, the screams might have been genuine Merseyside. George, John, Paul, and Ringo had found a new world to conquer. Some press conference. For half an hour, there was so much din you couldn't tell a word. It was a matter of everybody being patient, hoping it would begin eventually.
We came down the steps of the plane, you know, and there was all this huge turnout that we hadn't expected. So it was a very up buzz from the word go, really, you know. And we kind of bustled into a press conference. That was over in kind of 15 minutes of shouting and everything. It was quite a little test, that, you know, because you don't quite know how it's all going to go, but it all went great. Everyone had a laugh and stuff. Then I remember just driving in a kind of one of the big limos, which I wasn't used to, a big American limo, driving down the motorway into New York. And there was programs on all the kind of WINS and the sort of stations, and they had all our music coming, and they were doing things like, the limo carrying them is now 30 minutes away, it's just past Shea Stadium, whatever, and I could see it and hear the commentary. So it was a buzz, and it was a ridiculous buzz.
The crowds that waited outside could cheer them all the way to the hotel. No arguing about it, the Beatles are the top pop music phenomenon of the century.
Oh, it was incredible. It was something the English people could never fathom, because it was far wilder than we had in England. And you had to be there to find out what it was all about. You know, to go to New York and find middle-aged men walking down Fifth Avenue with Beatle wigs on their heads. I mean, it sounds unbelievably corny, but people were doing this. And if you switched on your radio, no matter where you went on the dial, at any time of the day, you would always hear a Beatle song. There was nothing else. It was complete and total saturation. And the Beatles were staying at the Plaza in New York. And, of course, there was guards all around them, because invariably there were crowds going spilling right over into Central Park, besieging the place. And when I was with them in their suite, there was Ringo on the phone in one room, broadcasting to the nation, while the others were listening in the other room, doing a phone-in, you know. And it was all rather hysterical and unbelievable, and we didn't believe it any more than the Beatles did.
On February the 9th, the Beatles were seen by 73 million Americans on their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show.
I couldn't possibly say that I timed that, because I knew it would be exactly right, but it was right, as it happens. That Ed Sullivan, going over at that particular moment for those two Ed Sullivan shows, could not have been more right. The records were just at the top. They'd been at the top for a couple of weeks, and they were still at the top. And it fitted in very well indeed.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm missing the lips I'm missing, and hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving I will send to you. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving I will send to you. Darling, I
We're not even going to see him. They'll bring him in the back way. I've been here almost all night since 1 a.m. The cops been threatening to put us in jail and get us in trouble. And I'm sick of it. We're not even going to see him. They should at least bring him through. And I don't think it's fair.
On February the 11th, the Beatles gave their first ever American concert at the Washington Coliseum and another the next day at Carnegie Hall. The Meet the Beatles album was number one in the U.S. by the time they made their second appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show from Miami on the 16th. Next, it's Welcome Home, Beatles. It's February 22nd, 1964, and the Beatles come home from their first American visit.
The fans obviously enjoyed it over there. I assume the press enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was marvellous. Yeah, everything. Every bit of it was knockout.
Even the work?
Yeah, we enjoyed it. It was different. Yeah. Working in different places with the audience all around us and... it was a novelty.
What impressed you most about the place? Do you have time to take anything in properly?
Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed the sun in Miami most of all. Yeah, healthy.
You're the healthy one.
No, but the sun was sort of
very healthy.
Yeah, very healthy.
Did you have a chance to get away from anybody at any time on the trip?
Yeah.
You got away from me twice.
what did you most like about the trip, Ringo?
Oh, I just loved all of it, especially Miami. The sun, I didn't know what it meant until I went over there.
Did you ever have a chance, John, to just get away on your own without anybody recognising you?
We borrowed a couple of millionaires' houses,
Well, we did. You could afford to buy a couple of millionaires' houses.
We sooner borrow them, it's cheaper.
What about the Beatles styles, all these wigs, suits and things? Are they catching on over?
Yeah, the same.
15 million a day.
I hear anyway that the four of you are going to be millionaires by the end of the year.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice.
Have you got time to actually spend this money?
What money?
You get money as well.
Doesn't he give any to you?
No. You see, my car is.
Now, is there any intention for you to go back to America or, in fact, join the brain drain in a big guitar drain and stay there?
We'd
like to go back, but we wouldn't stay if we love England.
Amongst the 73 million people who watched that first Ed Sullivan show was the young Billy Joel.
Well, when I saw those guys on stage, I said, wait a minute, hold on. They're writing their own songs, they're playing their own instruments. They got this, their hair's kind of long. And they obviously had a sense of humor. John Lennon had this look on his face. And he was looking into the camera, which was like, oh, come on. I mean, let's not all be all that serious about this. And they looked like guys who just could walk off the street corner and do that. Which beforehand, a lot of groups that had gotten featured on Ed Sullivan looked like they were manufactured in Hollywood, like Fabian, Frankie Avalon, those kind of people. Somebody else wrote the songs. They didn't really play the instruments. They didn't even really sing that well. They just looked good. Whereas the Beatles kind of brought it, down to the working class, I think.
She's been gone, I want no one to talk to me. It's not the same, but I'm to blame, it's plain to see. So go away, leave me alone, don't bother me. I can't believe that she would leave me on my own. It's just not right when every night I'm all alone. I've got no time for you right now, don't bother me. I know I'll never be the same if I don't get her back again. Because I know she'll always be the only girl for me. But till she's here, she's come home until that day. Don't come around, leave me alone, don't bother me. I've got no time for you right now, don't bother me. I know I'll same if I don't get her back again, because I know she'll always be the
till she's here. Please don't come near, just stay away. I'll let you know when she's come home until that day. Don't come around, leave me alone. Don't bother me, don't bother me. Don't bother me.
March the 2nd, 1964 was the first day of shooting their first feature film, Hard Day's Night, and there were more awards to be collected, this time from the Variety Club of Great Britain, who'd voted them Show Business Personalities of the Year for 1963.
Ladies and gentlemen, just like to say it's very nice indeed to get, especially to get one each, because we usually have a bit of trouble cutting them in four. I'd just like to say thank you very much. It's a great honour.
Same goes for me. Thank you very much for giving us this Silver Heart.
Anyone who knows us know I'm the one that never speaks, so I'd just like to say thanks a lot.
I'd just like to say the same as the others. Thanks for the Purple Heart.
Silver! Silver!
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, Alan. We'd like to sincerely thank you all, and we've got to go now because the fella on the film wants us and he says it's costing him a fortune. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Can buy me love, love, can buy me love. Buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. But I don't care too much for money, money can't buy me love. I'll give you all I got to give if you say you love me too. May not have a lot to give, but what I got, I'll give to you. I don't care too much for money. Money can't buy me love, can't buy me love. Everybody's in it, so can't buy me love. No, 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 no. Say you don't want no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. The money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. The money can't buy me love. No, 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 no. Say you don't want the kind of thing. I'm a blah, 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 ba-doopy doopy. Say that you want the kind of thing the money just can't buy. Cause I don't care too much for money. Money can't buy me love. Can't buy me love. Love. Love.
Can't Buy Me Love, recorded in Paris back in January, released in the US on March the 16th, with advance orders of over 2 million copies. John Lennon's first book in his own right was published on the 23rd, and on April the 4th, the top five singles in the US were as follows. Number 5, Please Please Me. Number 4, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Number 3, She Loves You. 2 was Twist and Shout. And number 1, Can't Buy Me Love. Here's George Martin.
To begin with, it was a kind of re-export of their own sound, because it was an anglicised or Liverpudlian version of rhythm and blues that they'd been shipping out to the world for a while. And it was obviously changed, and in fact slightly emasculated, I think. And the Beatles themselves would be very, very quick to say that they didn't think their music was as good as the original. But it was a kind of adaptation of that with their own form. But it grew into something else. And I suppose what the world wanted at that time was something new anyway. It was looking for something, and they happened to fill the bill. The great thing about them was that they developed from that initial fairly easy and almost ephemeral success into something really lasting and worthwhile, basically because both John Lennon and Paul McCartney very quickly developed into great songwriters. I think that was the key to the whole thing.
Thank you.
say that might cause you pain. If I catch you talking to that boy again, I'm gonna let you down and leave you flat. Because I told you before, oh, you can't do that. Well, it's the second time I caught you talking to him. Do I have to tell you one more time? I think it's a sin. I think I let you down.
Let you down.
April the 24th, 1964, the Beatles finished shooting Hard Day's Night. On the 26th, they appeared at the New Musical Express annual Poll Winners Concert in London, and on May the 6th, a television special called Around the Beatles was broadcast in the UK. A song from that next.
You know you make me want to shout, click my fingers, shout, throw my hands back, shout, kick my heels up. Shout a little bit softer now. Shout a little bit louder now. Shout a little bit louder now. Shout a little bit louder now. Shout.
Shouts from the television special Around the Beatles. On May the 2nd, the Beatles' second album was number one in the US, and on the eve of their 1964 world tour, Ringo was rushed to hospital with tonsillitis, and they left on June the 4th with drummer Jimmy Nicol as a temporary replacement.
Hello, Australia. This is John Lennon of the Beatles here. I hope you're all having a great time over there.
This is Paul speaking. We're hoping to come over soon and visit Australia.
This is George. That's if you move it a few thousand miles nearer.
What a day it was at Adelaide Airport. Arriving to meet the citizens were John Lennon, two other Beatle regulars, and Jimmy Nicol. Paul McCartney was on the beat as usual. Jimmy, of course, was deputising for Ringo Starr, who had been too ill to travel at the same time, but was coming along later.
I see you.
Missed the ashtray.
Paul, what do you expect to find here in Australia?
Australians.
Do you have any acknowledged leader of the group?
No, not really.
Have you been practicing up your Australian accents?
No, Colin, not at all. We can't get it, you know.
If there are any three things you could do in Australia, what would they be?
First of all, I think I'd like to tie me kangaroo down sport. Then,
well,
some
of
the
yeah.
Are you individually millionaires yet?
No, that's another lousy room. I wish we were.
Brian Epstein a millionaire.
No, even he's not one, poor fellow.
Where does all the money go?
Well, a lot of it goes to Her Majesty.
She's a millionaire.
She's got her everything that I'm gonna try.
The Long Tall Sally EP, released in the UK on June the 19th. On June the 26th, the Hard Day's Night soundtrack album was released in the US, made up of half Beatles and half George Martin orchestrations. Unlike the UK version of the album, which contained all Beatles songs and, for the first time, all Lennon-McCartney compositions. On July 2nd, they arrived home from Australia, and on the 6th, attended the world premiere of Hard Day's Night in London.
Well, we did have a lot of offers beforehand to make films, and they wanted us to just be the group in the back or just pass through a film and just sing a couple of songs, but we didn't want that because we'd never enjoyed that sort of film. So we waited until we had a reasonable offer, and then Walter Shenson, the producer, came along, and with Dick Lester, the director, and we liked them immediately, and they had good ideas, and we all got together, and they said they want a film that we'll enjoy making and that we'll enjoy seeing in the end. And so we just waited until this offer came along, and we did that. The most important thing, I thought, was, besides us liking it, you know, so that the film would be a hit and other people would like it, because, you know, everybody's ready to jump to say, you know, well, they may make good records, or so they've had hit records, but the film's crummy. Yeah. And so that was the biggest thing. We wanted everybody to enjoy it as well.
I think a lot of people expected it to be just one of the kinds of films you were talking about, the real slapdash kind of film, especially because it's our first film ever, you know, and they expected us to just go on and really be very wooden and sort of not be able to act.
We had an exceptionally good director, Dick Lester, and, you know, he was a good fella, and he liked us, we liked him, and we all got on well, and he had a good sense of humour, so it made it much easier for us.
It's about 2 days and two nights of our life, really, where we leave Liverpool to come to London on a train, and it's all little things that happen on a train, you know, like we have an argument with a fella on the train and all different things that happen. Also, Paul's grandfather, Wilfred Bramwell. Well, Wilfred Bramwell plays Paul's grandfather's on the train, and he gets us up into all tricks and he runs away.
know, the title song is one that we particularly like. John and I wrote this especially for the film because, I mean, with a title like that, you couldn't write it for anything else, I don't think. That's not normally the way we work, because John and I normally sit down and if we think of something, then we'll write a song around it. But we don't normally write to order like that. But the producer of the film, Walter Shenson, who's a great fella, came up to John and I and he asked us if we'd do this song, especially for the opening and the closing credits, you know. So we just thought about it and thought, it seems a bit ridiculous writing a song called Hard Day's Night, because it sounded funny at the time. But after a bit, you know, we got the idea of saying that it had been a hard day's night and we'd been working all the day, sort of thing. Get back to a girl and everything's fine, you know. And we sort of turned it into one of those songs.
Yeah, I think it's fab. And I also like it because I thought of the title.
It's been a hard day's night and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do to make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So I ventured on home, 'cause when I
We did that.
Hard Day's Night, number one in the UK on July 18th, number one in the US on August the 1st. And on the 11th, the movie had its American premiere. Next, the first American tour. On August the 19th, 1964, the Beatles left London for their first American tour. 25 concerts in 24 cities in 32 days. On the 23rd, they played the Hollywood Bowl.
I wonder if you have any particular comments to make about your visit to Los Angeles, John.
Well, it's been great and thrilling, you know, and we saw a couple of film stars, which we wanted to do, you know. It's just great, and the bowl was marvelous.
What did you think about the audience and the way they... Most of the people, there were more than 17,000 persons in the Hollywood Bowl, and of course, not all of them teenagers, but for the most part, they were young adults and your fans. I wonder if you'd care to comment on the way they conducted themselves the night of your performance.
Well, it was so good. It was almost too well behaved, you know. They were very good, weren't they? I've never seen a crowd so big, so well behaved. Really, you know, somebody did a great job.
How do you feel about the reaction of teenage America, young America, to your music, and the way they show their appreciation of the Beatle music by their screaming and their shrieking and their cheering?
Especially
when you're performing. This is what I mean. You know, you can hardly. The predominant sound, of course, is the enthusiasm from the audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we played for about 4 or 5 years. being completely heard. You know, and it was good fun, and it's just as good fun to play being not heard and being more popular. You know, they pay the money. If they want to scream, scream, we scream.
If I have to go, you'll be thinking of me. Somehow I will know, someday when I'm lonely, wishing you weren't so far away, then I will remember things we said today. You said you'd be mine, girl, till the end of time. These days such a kind girl seems so hard to find. Someday when we're dreaming, deep in love, not a lot to say, then we will remember things we said today. Love me all the time, we'll go on and on. Someday when we're dreaming, deep in love, not a lot to say, then we will remember things we said so again. Love me all the time, girl, we'll go on and on.
No, we'll never get used to it, because it's all never seems as though it's happening to us anyway. I mean, you know, we sort of pick up a newspaper and read about the Beatles, and I just read about them, you know, as though I'm not one of them, sort of thing. I just read, oh, the Beatles are doing good.
We never think of it as a phenomenon or any phenomenon at a few, you see. We just keep going. To me, it's just like in the old days when we were playing for sort of a couple of dollars a night, you know, just because we get more money, we still play the same.
Yeah, well, we're still basically the same. It's just that we can afford things, but now, as we got the money, there's not as many things that we can think of that we want to buy. I could think of hundreds of things when I didn't have any money, but now, you know, I don't.
Well, thanks very much, you know, and this is Paul McCartney signing off.
And me, I enjoyed it. George Harrison.
And me, keep swinging, Ringo Starr.
Good to me, you know, she's happy as can be, you know, she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. Baby says she's mine, you know, she tells me all the time, you know, she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's my little girl. So glad she's telling the whole world that her baby buys the things, you know.
fine. She's in love with me and I feel fine.
The last show of the American tour was in New York on September 20th, and a tour of the UK began on October the 9th. 27 shows in 32 days. I Feel Fine was released at the end of November, and the Beatles For Sale album was released in the UK December the 4th, whilst the Beatles 65 album came out in the States December 15th. On December the 24th, they began a 20-night run at London's Hammersmith Odeon in another Beatles Christmas show.
Everybody, this is Paul, and I'd just like to thank you all for buying our records during the past year. We know you've been buying them because the sales have been very good, you see. Don't know where we'd be without you, really, though.
In the army, perhaps.
Oh, we hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed melting them. No, that's wrong. Making them. We're in number 2 studio at the moment at EMI, taping this little message for you.
Yes, we are.
We are, indeed. I just thought I'd make the... This is the same studio we've used all along... Since the old days of Love Me Do. So many years ago, it seems,
doesn't it? Oh, those are the days.
Well, that's about all, I think. Except to wish you all a happy Christmas and a very new year. Now I'll pass you over to John. John?
John speaking. Thanks, all of you who bought me book. Thank you, folks, for buying it. It was very handy. And there's another one out pretty soon, it says here. Hope you buy that, too. It'll be the usual rubbish, but it won't cost much. You see? That's the bargain we're going to strike up. I write them in my spare time, it says here. It's been a busy year.
Did you write this yourself?
No. It's somebody's bad handwriter. It's been a busy year, Beetle Peedles, one way and another, but it's been a great year, too. You fans have seen to that. Page 2. Thanks a lot, folks, and a happy Christmas. And a merry goo year. Crimble, maybe. And I hand you to George, who'll speak to you. Now!
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Hi there.
I'd like to thank all of you for going to see the film. Spect a lot of you saw it more than once.
I did.
Did you? So did I. Thanks anyway, because it makes us very pleased, you know. We had a quiet time making it. Actually, we didn't. We had a great time making it. And we're glad it turned out okay. The next one should be completely different. We start shooting it in February. This time, it's going to be in colour.
Green.
It'll be a big laugh, we hope. Well, we
big laugh.
Yeah, it'll be a big laugh.
You and Megan?
And we may see all of you soon. Hope so. Anyway, all the best in Happy New Year and a Happy Christmas. And here's Ringo.
Thanks, George. Ringo, yeah? Well, the others have thanked you for the discs and John's book and for everything. Oh, no, for enjoying the film. I'd like to thank you just for being fans. It's been a funny year, you know. One minute we're in England, next we're away. Expect you're wondering where we've been.
So
well, Beatle people, we've been to Australia and America and who's top in there? New Zealand. And Australia.
And New Zealand.
Is that New Zealand? So loyal. Much travelling, but you've stayed loyal. Haven't you? Anyway, those airport receptions knocked us out, man. Great.
Dig.
Well, that's about it from me. I'd just like to say all the best for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Can you wash your father's shirt?
Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
Happy Christmas!